that she'd lost her mind. Her ill-timed laughs often caused that sort of concern. But ludicrous things would always be funny to her. Berg raised a brow, and now she understood that he was asking her what she wanted to do. He was ready to back her play despite the risk to him and his brother. Before Charlie could make a move, however, Dutch focused on the wolf whose ass Charlie had kicked.
"What are you doing, Deanne?"
he asked. His voice was calm, but Charlie had known Dutch since the idiot was a kid. He was a calm-before-the-storm kind of wolverine.
"I think we all need to go to our offices and have us a nice, civilized little talk. Y'all wouldn't mind that, would you?"
Charlie cringed. That accent.
"Oy." "That wasn't the deal, Deanne,"
Dutch reminded her.
"I think you need to mind yours, little man."
"Mind his what?"
"D."
The wolf pushed past the others and stepped in front of Dutch.
"Don't test me, boy."
That's when Max moved. All Charlie could see was a flash of steel, and a moment later, a blade was pressed against the wolf's throat, and another blade was pressed against Max's. The wolf and the badger eyed each other, both appearing impressed by the other's knife skill while each was ready to kill at a moment's notice. Charlie said, "Step back, Max." Max looked at her over her shoulder.
"Now,"
Charlie pushed. Then she jerked her head toward the Dunn brothers.
"Wait,"
Berg said before Max could move.
"You're worried about me?"
"I can't fight them and look out for you, too, or your brother." The two bears glanced at each other and back at Charlie.
"You're kidding, right?"
Dag asked. "No. You two are used to military rules of engagement. We're McKilligans. The only rule for us is to leave no witnesses." Charlie moved her attention to the she-wolf. "We'll go with you," she said, shrugging. "It's just as easy to leave no witnesses there as here." With Max's blade still pressed against her jugular, the wolf's eyes narrowed on Charlie. Her expression told Charlie the she-wolf was remembering how the three McKilligan sisters had wiped out that room full of armed men. What thin, compact little Stevie shifted into. What Max had pulled. What Charlie had done just 5 minutes ago. But now the she-wolf was debating whether she should have them all killed right here, right now.
"Berg Dunn?" a female voice called out. "Is Berg Dunn here?"
Frowning, Berg looked over the heads of the shifters surrounding him and raised his hand.
"Yes?"
"Hi, I'm Tonya. Bela Ben Ziv sent me."
Charlie had no idea who that was, but she saw Berg's shoulders relax a little.
"Your request has been approved," Tonya went on. "Just let us know if you need anything else."
Tonya, busy looking at her phone, began to walk away, but Berg's,
actually,
stopped her.
"Uh-huh,"
she asked, glancing up at him. He gestured to the armed shifters surrounding them.
"Oh, right. Sorry."
She motioned to someone Charlie couldn't see.
"Over here, ladies."
Charlie heard a growl and realized it had come from the she-wolf, a growl of annoyance. Laughing and chatting, a number of super-tall, and some very wide, women surrounded the group gathered around Charlie and the others. These women were armed, but none of them had pulled their weapons yet. Instead, they just kept talking among themselves. Stevie whimpered, and she suddenly crept behind Charlie and buried her head against her back. She was panting. All these women, they weren't just shifters. They were bear sows. Something that seemed to concern even the she-wolf. But she wasn't giving up the McKilligans without a fight.
"Excuse me, Tonya," the she-wolf practically snarled, "but these ladies are under our, protection at the moment. So we'd appreciate if y'all would..."
"Sorry,"
another female voice called out, as a 6'9" female rushed up to the group.
"So sorry. I had to get the kids from skating practice."
And the kids were with her. Three of them. One in hockey gear, the other in a skating dress, and the third so small she was hanging from her armed mother's big shoulders. The mother sow happily looked around the group before cheerily asking,
"So, what are we doing?"
That's when the she-wolf's compatriots lowered their weapons, and one of them said, Sorry, Deanne. We're out. Not clear on how disgusted she should be, Charlie softly asked Berg, Did your bear friends just use that woman's children as shields?
Not at all. I know Stephanie. She's a big multitasker. She brought her kids because she's trying to do a lot of things at once. The beauty is, the other breeds instinctively know not to startle or upset a sow with cubs. None of them would be left standing, and they know it.
He winked at her before focusing back on the action. The she-wolf stepped away from Max, both eyeing each other as they slipped their blades back into the holsters. Without another word, the she-wolf walked off, those who'd come with her long gone.
"Tell Bela," Berg said to Tanya. "Thank you."
"Sure, sure," she replied, texting into her phone. "Just keep in mind, they're only under bear protection for as long as they're living on Karthik Street. Understand?"
"I understand."
"Okay, great. Bela will inform the other organizations."
Still focused on her phone, she started to walk back the way she'd come.
"The others will get you to your car since that Smith is not to be trusted." "Okay, great. Thanks."
She walked into one of the sows, who pushed her away with a good amount of force. But Tanya didn't stumble or let the chef tear her attention away from her phone. Apparently, nothing could do that. Berg smiled down at Charlie, but then frowned.
"Charlie, are you okay?"
"Yeah. Why?"
"You look like you're in pain."
"Oh." She motioned behind her. "Stevie's attached herself to my back. Her claws are digging."
"Should I pry her?" "No."
Charlie shook her head. "If you do that, there will be tearing and ripping. So let's just pretend that we're all normal. That this weird situation, my sister attached to me like a spider monkey and all of us surrounded by the players of the WNBA, is completely commonplace." She clapped her hands together.
"Okay, let's go."
The group started off toward the exit, but Max grabbed Dutch's T-shirt and pulled him back.
"That was the group you were trying to get me to work for?"
"Yeah. Why?"
"Sweetie," she said, laughing. "Seriously?"
"So you scare them, Max. You scare everybody."
"That's not what I'm talking about. That she-wolf?"
"Deanne Smith."
"You ever watch those dog trainers on TV who handle pit bulls?"
"Sometimes."
"They always say don't put two male pit bulls together. Don't put two female pit bulls together."
She gestured between where the she-wolf had been standing and herself.
"Her and me? Two female pit bulls. You put us in the same cage, Dutch. One of us is not coming out."
Chapter 15 Rick Van Holtz was no longer surprised when his wife entered a room covered in bruises. Deanne performed a very dangerous job, and that meant, over the years, he'd sewn up knife cuts, cleared out bullet holes, and packed more ice than he could think of on bruised and battered body parts. Yet he wasn't sure how offering three women a job had led to this. Her arm in a sling, Deanne sat in a chair across from his desk. With a painful limp and a brutalized face, Sella Malone made her way across his office and sat in the other chair. The pair sat and didn't say a word, which was unusual. Not for Deanne. She'd never been chatty. But usually, when the pair came in together, they were already in the middle of an argument about something. Yet here they were, silent and severely damaged.
"Should I assume we don't have any new employees?" Rick guessed.
Deanne slumped down in her chair. Sella began studying something on the corner of his pristine desk. Normally he'd ask, "How bad is this?" But he already kind of knew. It wasn't every day one received a call from the head of the BPC herself to tell him, "Stay away from the McKilligan sisters. They're under our protection now."
"Did the bears do this to you?"
he finally asked. But then something shocking happened. Deanne slumped farther down in her chair, her gaze moving across the room until it focused on the wall behind his head. Sella suddenly became fascinated with the metal band of her watch. Now Rick was completely confused. He took a moment to study their wounds and realized there was nothing bear-like about them,
No giant claw marks across their throats. No obvious signs of head trauma from claws or teeth. They had all their eyes, and nothing had been ripped off them, like their arms or legs or lips. No, when Rick studied the damage done to both women, what he saw was a beating, a harsh, you-pissed-me-off beating.
Are you telling me the McKilligan sisters did this to you?
Sella cleared her throat, fussed with her watch band a little more before finally admitting, well, one of them. Rick's entire body jerked a little before he attempted to clarify that statement with,
while the other two held you down?
The pair exchanged glances, and Deanne suddenly shot up out of her chair and began to pace. Sella, however, dropped back in hers and blew out a large breath, but neither spoke.
Oh, Rick said. I see. First, there's cats and house securities,
the weasel explained to Charlie and her sisters while Berg drove them home.
They protect the cat nation.
There's a nation of cats? Max asked.
So many of them are solitary or have small families. They don't have big packs or prides, so they have no choice but to consider themselves a nation of cats. And then there's the group.
That's who you betrayed us for?
Charlie asked Dutch, and Berg smirked, glancing at his brother in the passenger seat to see the identical smirk on his triplet's face.
Okay, the weasel sighed in frustration. One more time with feeling for the back seat. I didn't betray you. I was trying to get you bitches a job.
Well, at least one bitch.
And that job has an employer match IRA and artery care. You won't find those kinds of benefits in Silicon Valley. Anyway,
he continued on,
the group protects all shifters, including hybrids, honey badgers, and wolverines.
Honey badgers don't want your help, Max reminded her friend.
The group is aware of how the badgers feel, but they've still decided to include you, as well as my kind, despite those feelings. And the bears have the BPC, Bear Preservation Council.
That sounds like a non-profit charity.
I think I gave them money once, Stevie said.
You?
One of my co-workers is a big supporter. She was selling cookies or something to raise money. And you know how much I love a good chocolate cookie. But she's not a bear.
BPC is a charity. They're all about the preservation and protection of bears worldwide.
And they're the ones protecting us.
Charlie suddenly leaned forward, her head between Berg and Dung.
And my question is why? Why are they protecting us? Are you paying them?
No.
Because we're not bears. I'm barely badger. Stevie's more cat. Max is irritating. Hey, so why are they helping us?
Because I asked them to.
Berg shrugged when Charlie kept staring at him.
I don't know what you want me to say.
The truth. Have you given them your lives? Do you now owe them a blood debt? Do you have to kill for this?
Well,
Dag finally said,
you are really not used to people helping you.
Because they don't unless they're getting something out of it. And I don't want to put you guys at any more risk.
You haven't put us at risk,
Berg insisted.
You've been shot and stabbed.
Not because of you.
No, because of my father. I have brought his curse into your life.
Maybe the bear just likes being helpful,
the weasel suggested. But Charlie immediately pointed a damning finger at him.
I don't talk to traitors. He's not a traitor, Max said. He's just a pathetic, pathetic friend.
And thank you very much.
Well, dude, what did you expect? You had to know once Charlie found out she was going to be pissed. You're just lucky she only beat the shit out of you.
She paused, then added, you're lucky you still have your arms.
Ungrateful. You're all ungrateful. You tried to capture them?
Well, if you're gonna make it sound wrong,
Deanne complained.
Deanne, these aren't wild lions we're bringing in from Africa. These are human beings who have clearly been trained to kill when necessary. Why didn't you just talk to them?
We tried that. They'd already run. and we can't let that one girl out in the world running around.
You mean Stevie McKilligan? You're worried about her? She's managed to go 24 years without rampaging in downtown Tokyo. I don't see why you couldn't have trusted her to hold on for a little bit longer.
Don't get that tone with me.
Well, when you're being irrational.
Irrational? Me?
What do you call it when you try to round up shifters you, and I'm quoting, don't much like the look of?
You didn't see her once she shifted.
I didn't have to. I've seen Novikov. He has tusks, like a goddamn walrus.
She's bigger than he is shifted. She's got to be at least 20 feet long, maybe longer. That ain't right. That's...
Please don't say unholy.
Unholy!
Rick briefly placed his head on his desk.
I love how your Christianity only comes into play when you don't have a rational argument for something you don't like.
I know what I know, and I know what I saw.
Rick sat up straight again, focused on the head coach of the hockey team he owned.
Sella, your thoughts?
I'm wondering if the two oldest can learn how to ice skate. She nodded. They've both got mighty fighting skills, and the middle one, she's dumb enough to be an enforcer for Novikov. Rick placed his elbows on his desk and rested his chin in the palms of his hands.
So, let me sum up. We've got one vote for total annihilation, and one vote for forcing them to join the hockey team. Am I correct?
Yes, both females replied. As soon as Berg turned onto the street, Charlie knew something was wrong.
Why are all those bears standing in front of our house?
Stevie asked, panic in her voice rising.
They've come to eat us, haven't they?
Oh, my God! Max exploded. No one wants to eat your scrawny ass.
I have a high metabolism.
Charlie snapped her fingers.
Stop it,
she ordered.
How do you do that?
Berg asked when both younger sisters immediately fell silent. Years of training and abuse, my friend. Years of training and abuse.
You're like one of those Russian bear trainers.
Yeah, it's great until they suddenly turn on you on live TV and rip your scalp off.
You do know we're right here? Max asked.
Shut up. Berg stopped the car and Charlie got out, ordering her sisters to stay here until I... But Max was already out of the car and walking toward the crowd of bears. Stevie had also gotten out and had climbed the closest big tree, where she nonsensically hissed at no one in particular. Sighing, Charlie closed the car door and rushed to catch up with Max.
What's going on, Tiny? She asked when she saw their landlord.
Something is in your... What happened to your face?
It's nothing. I just got in a fight with a wolf and...
What was the other one?
Siberian tiger, Max replied.
Yeah, Siberian tiger.
Oh, and him.
She pointed at Dutch. Tiny stared at Dutch and back at Charlie several times before informing Dutch.
She kicked your ass. I am aware, Dutch snapped. Can we now get back to what you were saying? Something is in your house.
He screwed his nose up.
It tried to cloak its scent. I mostly smell bear spray, but who puts bear spray on just to sneak into our neighborhood? I can't imagine anyone that stupid.
But Charlie could. She looked at Max, and her sister's expression told her she thought the same thing. Where's your dog, Berg? Charlie asked. Berg whistled, then called out,
Hey, shithead.
Charlie growled a little.
You need to give that dog a proper name. How was that not a proper name?
Don't... She stopped herself. Now was not the time. Berg's dog came around from the back of his house and took his time trotting across the street to reach the group. Once he stood next to them, Charlie bent over slightly to stare in the dog's eyes. Even on all fours, the dog was goddamn huge, and then whispered into his ear. With a bark, he ran toward the house and leaped into an open window that Charlie knew for a fact she'd left closed and locked.
What did you say to him?
Dag asked.
That's between canines.
She smirked. You wouldn't understand. They heard a huge yelp from the upstairs. Then came the sounds of things crashing, running, more crashing, some screaming, a few barks of pain that did not come from a dog, until finally her father crashed through an upstairs window, rolled down the shingled roof, fell off the roof, and landed in such a way that should have killed even him. His neck hit the ground first, legs bent up and over his head. And although the bears gasped in shock, neither Charlie nor her sister were remotely fazed when Freddie McKilligan unrolled himself and got to his feet, seemingly unharmed.
"You," the asshole said, pointing an accusing finger at Charlie, "sent that vicious bitch up to attack me."
Charlie answered that accusation by slamming her fist into her father's face. Max slammed her fist into the other side of his face. That's when Stevie moved from the safety of the tree.
"No, no, no!"
She scrambled down the trunk and ran over to the group. She had to grit her teeth to make her way through the crowd of bears, but she still did it. And she did it for him. Stevie planted herself in front of the whining idiot who was busy trying to put his jaw back into place. Not surprisingly, this was not, and would not be, the last time someone punched their father's jaw out of its socket. It had happened so much in the past, he didn't even need a doctor anymore. He just had to jerk it back into place. The bears cringed when they heard the snap.
"Ungrateful bitches!"
he barked when he could speak again. Max hissed in warning before unleashing the blade-like claws on each hand. She wanted to bathe in their father's blood when she took his life.
"What the fuck are you doing here?" Charlie demanded.
"A little respect, please. I am your father."
"Fuck your respect, bitch. Do you know what you've done? Do you even care?"
"See?"
her father asked.
"No one. This is why I need a son. You're useless to me. You don't even know what I've been through, and already you are accusing me."
"I'm accusing you because you're an idiot, and you don't have a son because your DNA is as fucked up and as impotent as you are."
It was a low blow, one meant to wound and hurt. But no child wanted to hear that even the father they hated had never wanted them, simply because they were born with vaginas. The missile she'd sent over his bow found its mark. Her father grabbed her by her T-shirt, curling his fist in the cotton material and yanking her close. Charlie wasn't scared. She'd stopped fearing her father decades ago. Plus, she had Max there. Those claws were flying back, readying a strike so brutal the bastard would easily lose his arm. But before Max could finish the attack, Berg Dunn's big body was between Charlie and her father, Dag on the other side. And the other bears? Ready to move. His neighbor grizzlies had allowed their grizzly humps to pop. There were fangs, claws, all unleashed and at the ready. Somewhere behind their father, Stevie whimpered, and Charlie knew her poor sister was using all her energy not to run screaming from the street, the neighborhood, the state, the country. With utter calm, his gaze lowered, Berg growled, "Sir, I'd strongly suggest you move your hand away from your daughter. And I mean do it now." Stupid, but always a survivor, Freddie McKilligan examined what was happening around him with fresh eyes. Stevie and Max might be the smallest ones there, but they were also the least in danger. All those bare eyes were focused on Freddie, and he knew it. He let Charlie's T-shirt go and raised both hands, palms out, showing those surrounding them that he was not a danger.
"Now if you'd step back a few feet,"
Berg suggested, ordered, his gaze still not on Freddie, although Charlie didn't know why. When her father didn't move quickly enough, Berg's dog reappeared, putting his big body between Freddie and Berg, snarling and snapping until her father stumbled back. Then the dog came around Berg, nosed Dag out of the way, and sat down beside Charlie. She reached over and patted the dog's giant head.
"You need to go," Max said to their father.
"Now." "I need a place to stay."
He'd barely gotten that last word out before Max and Charlie started laughing. The big, loud, mean laugh they only used when it came to their father.
"Fuck you! Go!"
Charlie said, still laughing.
"You're just going to throw me out on the street?"
"Yes,"
Charlie and Max said together. He went for the weak link,
Stevie?
He tried for a sad expression.
You wouldn't throw your daddy out, would you, sweetie?
Stevie took off her backpack and dug her wallet out. She yanked out several bills.
Take this. Go.
Stevie!
You need to go. I can only protect you for so long, and even I am running out of patience here.
But I'm your father.
I know,
Stevie said on a sigh, tugging the straps of her pack back onto her shoulders.
I double-checked my DNA. You're definitely my father.
And she couldn't have sounded more defeated by this information.
But all my therapists say that I need to cut myself off from toxic relationships. And, Daddy, you're toxic.
This is their fault, isn't it?
He said, his accusing glare lashing over at Charlie and Max.
They've turned you against me.
Stevie shook her head.
It's like you don't even try to listen to me.
I'm not going to let these two evil females come between us. I love you, Stevie. You're my favorite daughter.
With a cringe, Stevie asked,
How is that a good thing to say? For any reason?
She motioned him away when he tried to hug her.
Daddy, just go.
Fed up, Charlie pulled her cell phone from the back pocket of her jeans.
What are you doing?
Her father demanded. I'm calling Uncle Will and telling him exactly where you are at this very moment.
You wouldn't dare.
Charlie briefly held up her phone. I have an international plan, and he knows you stole his money.
I did not.
Charlie paused to let her shoulders slump in exhaustion.
Really, Dad? Seriously?
Of course you stole that man's money, and I hope he cuts your throat for it. Freddie slapped her phone out of her hands, and Charlie had her gun pulled and pointed at her father's head. But before she could squeeze the trigger, Berg had picked her up and moved her away. Dag had one hand around Freddie's throat, moving the much smaller badger back, ignoring his thrashing and curses.
Get her out of here,
Max said to Berg, tossing him Charlie's phone. Otherwise, she's going to kill him. He took Max's direction and carried Charlie toward his house. But unable to keep her rage in check, she screamed,
This isn't over, old man. I will hunt you down and kill you. I'm calling Will and telling him exactly where you are. I will have all the McKilligans looking for your dumb ass. And when he cuts your heart out, I will dine on it with a good Scottish ale, you worthless son of a bitch.
Berg carried her inside his house and into his living room. He placed her on the couch and sat down beside her, taking the gun from her. He cleared the chamber and dropped the mag, placing all the pieces on the coffee table in front of them. Done with that, he relaxed back on the couch, his arm touching her shoulder. For several long minutes they sat like that, in silence, until he finally repeated,
"With a good Scottish ale."
Charlie laughed and couldn't immediately stop. Only her father could make her this psychotic. With every other part of her life, she was reasonable, calm, rational. But with her idiot father... She rested against Berg's big arm, tears of laughter streaming down her face.
It was so specific, Berg noted, his laughter joining hers.
I'm sorry, she said.
For what?
Bringing my family's crazy to your nice, quiet street.
Don't even worry about it. Bears love this shit.
She wiped her tears, gazed at him.
They do?
We say we hate it, but we're all so nosy.
He shrugged.
We really love watching when it's not happening to us. Sorry.
As long as my father's crazy isn't putting you in a bad situation with your neighbors, I don't care if they watch every second of the drama. It's the least we can do for you guys. You know. Entertain.
You sure it's okay to leave Max with your dad? She looked about as ready to kill him as you did.
She reacts to me. If I'm not there, she should be fine.
Besides, she wouldn't upset Stevie by killing him. She knows she'd never hear the end of it. We could be in an old age home, Max on her deathbed, and Stevie would find a way to bring that shit up and make her feel guilty all over again.
Wow. She's good.
Charlie smiled, proud of her sisters for completely different reasons. Stevie can learn anything from a book,
and when it comes to psychiatry, she's read them all. So she wields guilt like a master swordsman. And Max isn't nearly as much of a psychopath as the social worker said, because otherwise she wouldn't feel any guilt at all. At least that's what I tell myself. All the time. Grabbing her father by the back of the neck, Max dragged his dumb ass into the house, with Stevie leading the way, because she was too afraid to remain behind with the bears. Dag took it upon himself to get the neighbors to disperse, although Max heard a few of them ask if Charlie was upset enough to start baking again. Once in the kitchen, Max shoved their father away. He spun around, fist pulled back. But all Max had to do was cock her head to the side and stare at him. He quickly changed his approach. He lowered his fist, smiled, and opened his arms wide.
"Honey!"
She held up her hand. "Don't even bother. Just get your shit and go."
"I have nowhere to go. They're out to kill me."
"Because you stole from your own brother.
That's not Dad. It was an accident."
Max glanced over at Stevie, but her little sister just sadly shook her head before dropping into one of the kitchen chairs.
"Okay, well, not an accident,"
her father corrected. "But where's the money, Dad?" When her father did nothing but stare at her, Max guessed,
"Someone stole it from you, didn't they?" "It's not my fault," he cried.
It was the man's refrain. According to their aunt, he'd been using it since he could talk. It was his first full sentence.
"But Will is blaming me anyway. He's always been out to get me. You have to help me."
"No," Stevie said before Max could. "No, Daddy, we don't."
"You'd throw me back out there?" he cried, arms sweeping wide.
"We don't have to," Stevie reasoned. "The bears will do it for us." She looked behind Freddy, and Max moved so she could see as well. Dag stood outside the open kitchen window, brown eyes watching their father closely.
"Everything all right?"
the bear asked.
"You guys need anything?"
"Not yet, Dag," Max said. "But don't go anywhere."
Freddy's head dropped, realizing he couldn't manipulate his way into a place to stay. Not even with Stevie.
"Fine," he said. "I'll go. But do you think I can get a little more..."
"Cash?" Max asked. And when her father simply gazed at her, she finally snapped,
"How the fuck do you steal over $100 million and still have no goddamn money?"
Chapter 16. Charlie stood. "I better go back over there."
"That sounds like a really bad idea to me."
She nodded. "It is. I can't lie, but..." Berg gripped her arm, and she thought he was about to pull her back onto the couch, but he stood and led her to his kitchen. He stopped and grabbed two beers from the refrigerator, then continued to lead her out the back door. He stopped on the porch, closing the screen door and dropping to the top step. Still holding onto her arm, he guided Charlie until she sat on the step beneath him. He handed her a beer and held on to his own. Charlie honestly didn't know what she'd expected after that. But she was totally unprepared for what he did do, which was absolutely nothing. She kept waiting for something, one of those dude moves, as Max called them, a stroke on the back of her neck, a kiss to her cheek, a massage for her shoulders. But nope, he just drank his beer, quietly. Charlie became so anxious, she finally asked, "What are you doing?"
"Me? Nothing."
"Yeah. Why are you doing nothing?"
"Do you want me to do something?"
"No."
"Then, okay."
"I guess I'm just used to guys making the move."
"What guys?"
"Just guys."
"Full human guys?"
Charlie sipped her beer. "Yeah, mostly."
"Well, most shifter guys aren't making the move."
"Why not?"
"We like our faces attached to us rather than on the floor, in front of us."
"You think I'd hurt you?"
"Not on purpose. My sister didn't mean to nearly tear her high school boyfriend's arm off when he snuck up behind her and tried to cover her eyes. That was an uncomfortable conversation for my dad with the kid's parents."
So you're just cautious in general?
Yes. I don't want my arms ripped off.
Charlie chuckled a little. I don't think I could tear those arms off.
I've seen you in a fight. Yes, you could.
Britta came around the side of the house, carrying a big duffel bag and her hockey stick, several other players with her.
What's going on? She asked. People are milling. I know there's drama afoot when people are milling.
It's not a big thing, Berg said,
attempting to protect Charlie from what he couldn't. The walking embarrassment that was her old man. Just go to practice. Charlie frowned.
I thought you guys were at practice.
That was practice with Novikov. Then we come here, get a little snack, and go to the rink a couple of streets over so there's no sobbing.
I couldn't help it, one of the players announced, pacing away. He was really mean to me.
See? Britta asked. Now what's going on here?
Britta. My father's here, Charlie announced, refusing to pretend anything when it came to Freddie McKilligan, being an asshole.
Why did he come here? Britta asked.
Didn't he steal, like, 100 mil from his own brother?
Britta.
What, Berg? Is that a secret?
It's nothing to be announced.
Charlie shrugged. Announce away. Charlie began stretching out her neck, tensing up at the thought of another confrontation with the idiot. I should go over there, she said again. But even she knew there was no real commitment behind the statement.
He's still over there? Britta demanded.
My sisters will try to get rid of him, but Stevie's too nice, and I don't want to see Max in prison, so... Britta dropped her bag and sticks.
Come on, guys, she said to the other players before marching off.
Charlie jumped up to block the sow, but Berg placed his hand against her hip and advised, you'll never stop her.
But she doesn't have to.
It's not about have to for Britta. It's about her infinite will.
Getting blindingly frustrated by her father, Stevie was relieved when she heard the doorbell. She rushed to the front door and yanked it open.
Yes?
She asked the young man standing there. He sighed, shook his head.
You still don't remember me?
I should.
You just saw me a few hours ago. I'm Cooper.
When she continued to silently stare, he added,
Mr. Needy.
Oh, Kyle's brother.
His gaze rolled up and he took several deep breaths.
Do you need something? She pushed. Or do you just want my autograph?
At first I felt bad about this, but now...
Gazing directly at her, he reached his arm out and yanked something over. Kyle.
Do you mind if he stays with you for a while?
Well,
great.
Kyle's brother shoved Kyle into the house, ignoring the fact that his brother tripped and nearly fell to the floor before he got control of his long legs.
I think the family needs a break from him, and he seemed like a better option than the Motel 6 near LaGuardia.
Disgusted, Stevie shook her head and chastised,
I don't believe you people. Kyle Jean-Louis Parker is a genius, and as a fellow genius, I think all of you should treat him much better than you.
I can't, the overrated pianist yelled out dramatically,
before stomping back to his waiting limo.
I can't,
he screamed again, before getting in and disappearing down the street.
Wow,
Stevie said to poor Kyle as she started to close the door. Your brother has issues.
Has he had any psychological tests?
Of course not, although I've highly recommended them.
Stevie nearly had the front door closed when something pushed it open again.
Hey, Stevie.
It was casually said, but it was casually said by a bear standing with several other bears and some dogs and cats. Without thinking, only instinct, Stevie arched her back and jumped back about 10 feet. Then she scrambled over a wingback chair and pressed her body into the corner. Britta gawked at her before stating,
I don't know what the hell that was,
but we'll not discuss it. I'm here for your father. Stevie gasped.
Are you going to eat him?
Britta started to answer, stopped, headed into the house instead. Her friends followed behind her.
Outstanding specimens,
Kyle noted.
Think they'll sit for me?
Aren't you worried they'll eat you?
No.
Lucky.
Before Stevie could warn her father about the bears, there was another knock at her front door and a,
Hello?
Yes?
she called out, afraid to move. The Asian male slowly walked inside, looking around.
"What are you doing here?"
Kyle asked the man with contempt. The male grinned when he saw Kyle.
"Your sister ordered me here. I'm to stay by your side as long as you're away from your family, in case anyone tries to kill you, since you're just so important."
"I am important, peasant."
"Keep calling people peasants. You probably will get killed."
"Whatever. I'm hungry."
Kyle sniffed the air and headed toward the kitchen.
"Hi,"
the male said, giving Stevie a little wave.
"Sorry about this."
"Kyle should be protected. His brain is very important."
"If you say so."
Stevie came around the chair and walked over to the man, holding out her hand.
"Stevie McKilligan."
"Shen Li. We met. At Livy's apartment. When your sister tried to kill her cousin and the grizzly."
"Oh, I do think I remember you."
Pulling her hand away, she asked,
"Are you a bear?"
"Yes. Giant panda."
"You know,"
she put her hand to her chest,
"I'm not afraid of you at all."
"You shouldn't be."
He grinned.
"I'm very nice."
"And so cute."
She grabbed his cheeks with both hands and twisted.
"Like a big stuffed toy."
Hey, Max said from behind her. "Dad's getting in an argument with some bears. I'm really hoping they kick his..."
"Stevie! What the fuck are you doing?"
"Isn't he cute?" Stevie demanded, her fingers still on Shen's face. But then her sister was next to her, slapping her hands down. Max didn't know what her idiot sister was thinking. Not only did the giant panda look confused and irritated, but he was armed. A holstered Sig Sauer attached to his jeans, just barely covered by a light jacket. He wasn't as big as the grizzlies and cats that had just stormed into their house, only 6 feet or so, but his shoulders were wide as hell, and there was nothing but muscles under that black t-shirt and jeans. And unlike Max herself, he didn't dye his black hair one color, instead letting those black stripes cut through his thick, white strands with pride. Sharp cheekbones accented the black eyes currently staring at Stevie.
"But look at him!" Stevie practically squealed. "He's just so damn adorable!"
Max didn't know what her sister was looking at. The man she saw was probably military-trained and would have no qualms about hurting people that got too close to those he was trying to protect. But Stevie was acting like he was one of those giant stuffed pandas at the front of a big toy store. Grabbing her sister's hands away from the poor guy's face, she yanked her across the room. She was about to start yelling when Britta came stomping through the house. She had their father caught by his hair, bending him over at the waist so he couldn't put up a fight. She kept him in front of her, pushing him while her friends backed her up by merely being there.
"Your daughter wants you out, so you're out,"
Britta said to him calmly,
"and if you come back, we'll rip the skin from your bones."
She led him out of the house, and her friends disappeared with her. The door slammed shut, and Max let out a sigh. She didn't know how Charlie did this on a daily basis, maintain order. Honestly, it would have been easier just to make a run for it, or lay waste to everyone in a 5-mile radius. Illegal, but easier. Oh, and, yeah, morally wrong. Moving away from Max and Stevie, the panda said,
"I'll be staying here to keep an eye on the kid. Hope you guys don't mind."
"Wait, that kid's staying?"
"Just for the night, I'm sure. There was some family drama, apparently."
Well, Max completely understood that.
"He's my friend," Stevie said, yanking her arms away from Max. "Kyle can stay for as long as he wants."
"How old is that kid?"
17.
Max raised an eyebrow and Stevie gasped.
"We're not that kind of friends."
"You better not be. I'm sure Charlie wouldn't like that one bit." She started to return to the kitchen, but she realized that Stevie was heading toward the unsuspecting panda, who had turned away as he put his bag down on the couch. Terrified at what she might do next, Max rushed over and grabbed her sister around the waist. She lifted her up and carried her out of the living room and into the kitchen down the hall. Max dropped her and spun Stevie around to face her.
"I'm going to say this once.
Stay away from the panda.
Stevie clapped her hands together and crowed,
but he's just so cute.
About 15 minutes later, Britta returned, looking quite proud of herself.
All done.
Thanks. And just so you can relax, I paid 3 of the Mueller boys down the street to drive him to Philly. They'll drop him in the middle of the South Side. He'll have to fend for himself there. Shocked laughter exploded out of Charlie.
You...
She gave herself a moment to regain control.
You didn't have to do that.
I spent 2 minutes with that man. Trust me, it was a pleasure. She retrieved her bag and sticks.
You should stay for a while. I'll bring dinner back.
I don't want to put you guys out. You're not. But I know from personal experience, sometimes you need a break from your family, even the ones you love. Besides, some smart-ass kid is at your house now. You probably don't want to go back tonight.
What smart-ass kid?
No idea, but he said he was a genius. She rolled her eyes.
Whatever.
Name's Kyle, one of the other players volunteered.
Oh.
Charlie nodded. Yeah, he actually is a genius. But from what my sister tells me, he is a lot of work.
See? You don't want to go home. Stay here, relax, watch TV.
I'll bring dinner back. She motioned to the players.
Come on, bitches.
Charlie waited until they were all gone before informing Berg, I love your sister.
She has a way.
Speaking of which, you don't have to stay if you don't want to. Looking over her shoulder, she asked the bear, And if I want to stay?
Then you are more than welcome.
I don't want to put you guys out, though.
You won't.
The screen door opened and closed, and Dag stood on the porch, scratching his head and staring at a sheet of paper.
Where have you been?
His brother asked.
Taking orders. Who was giving you orders? Ugh, everybody.
He took a step forward, still staring at the paper.
Charlie, if you are feeling moody and need to bake, there are, requests here.
Requests?
Yes. Mrs. Franklin would like your cinnamon rolls. Mr. Grombeck would like your honey cake with white icing. But Tiny wants your honey pineapple cake.
Poor Dag scratched his head in frustration.
I can't read my handwriting here.
Dag, she said, patting his leg, it's okay. I'm not in the mood to bake. I've had a long day. I just want to do... nothing.
Oh, okay. Good.
Letting out a relieved breath, he leaned against the railing surrounding most of the porch and stayed there. Charlie didn't really think about it until Berg cleared his throat.
What?
Dag asked his brother.
Go away.
Dag's gaze slowly bounced between Berg and Charlie.
Oh!
He finally said, grinning.
Right. Got stuff to do.
He went back into the house.
Yeah, Berg muttered. Lots to do. Like look at porn online.
Don't judge. Sometimes one needs to check out bad homemade porn to feel alive.
Big porn fan, are you?
Not particularly. Except the Japanese animation stuff.
Seriously?
Berg asked, laughing. Yeah. If I watch that stuff, then I'm not worrying what do her parents think. Why don't I worry? Because the girl getting hardcore fucked while still managing to keep her nurse's hat on, an actual video, by the way, is just animation.
That's amazing logic.
Isn't it, though? As promised, Britta brought dinner back, but thankfully not her fellow players. Those she'd sent off, so it was just the 4 of them. Charlie had checked in on her sisters by texting them, and the reply she got back must have been satisfactory because she didn't run over there to see what might be happening. Instead, she relaxed and hung out. She read the newspaper while Berg fought with his idiot brother about what to watch on TV. After dinner, she read the current events magazines Britta kept on the coffee table, so they looked like they were thoughtful bears, while Berg continued to fight with his idiot brother, as well as now his obnoxious sister, about what to watch on TV. The fact that the 3 of them still disagreed and fought like they used to when they were cubs didn't seem to bother Charlie, and Berg appreciated that. Then again, Considering what went on around her at any given time, dealing with the Dunn triplets must have been like a vacation in comparison. Around midnight, Dag went out after getting a text from a she-cat a few streets over, and Britta took her laptop and whoever she was direct messaging up to her room. When the door closed behind her, Berg knew she was in for the night. That left him and Charlie sitting on opposite ends of the couch. He was just about to move over to be closer to her when the dog suddenly sauntered into the room, climbed over the coffee table, and into the middle of the couch. He stretched out fully so that his back feet nearly touched Berg's leg. His big head dropped into Charlie's lap, and she immediately began petting him while still reading her magazine. Berg wouldn't have been so pissed, though, if his dog hadn't looked over at him and given what Berg could only guess was a dog smile. Or leer. The bastard was mocking him. Eventually, Charlie tossed the magazine aside and walked out. He heard the door to the first-floor bathroom close, and that's when Berg tapped the dog on his hind leg and motioned to the floor. Ignored, Berg tapped the dog again and added, "Get down." Now the animal growled at him. Fed up, Berg went ahead and pushed the dog off the couch. He hit the floor with a heavy thud, but he got up in seconds, turned, and threw himself at Berg. The two wrestled on the couch until they rolled off and slammed to the floor, their big bodies shoving the coffee table halfway across the room. "Ahem." Berg cringed and glared down at the dog he'd finally pinned to the ground. And there went that rude, toothy dog grin again. "If you're going to wrestle him on the floor," Charlie said, standing over them, "you should really name him."
He started it. He wouldn't move.
"He's a 200-pound dog. He doesn't have to move." Getting to his feet, Berg faced Charlie.
"You're not leaving, are you?"
"I have a meeting tomorrow with my bitchy aunt. For tea." She stuck her tongue out. "I hate tea. Then again, I hate my aunt." She rubbed her forehead. "But I know Stevie's going to be up all night with Kyle, talking about genius shit."
"You can stay here for the night,"
Berg offered, and without moving anything else, Charlie lifted her left eyebrow
on the couch, appropriately.
"You don't mind?"
"Not at all. Actually, I'll take the couch, and you can take my—"
"I'm not taking your bed," she cut in, "although I appreciate the offer."
"Actually," Berg said, trying hard not to outwardly cringe, "we have extra bedrooms, so you can have one of those."
Charlie pushed a loose curl off her forehead before asking with a smile, "You offered me the couch and your bed before one of your extra bedrooms?" He cleared his throat.
"I forgot we had them."
"You forgot you had extra bedrooms?" "I didn't know I was so distracting."
"Well, you are," he snapped back, embarrassed.
Laughing, she said, "I'll take the couch." He frowned, no longer embarrassed, but confused.
"Why? You're more than welcome to—"
"Oh, I know." She placed her hand on his forearm, and her fingers were warm and dry, and he liked how they felt against his flesh. "But if someone breaks in, I can shoot them. Legally."
"You're talking about your dad, aren't you?"
"When am I not talking about my dad?" she asked, clearly disgusted. "But honestly, I wouldn't put it past him to drag his ass back here and start some shit. And I'd like to ensure he's greeted properly. So the couch is good." With a shrug, Berg went to get Charlie a new toothbrush and toothpaste. While she returned to the bathroom, he went upstairs and grabbed extra pillows and blankets from the closet. He returned to the living room and proceeded to make up her bed. "Blankets?" she asked when she walked back in. "It's, like, 80 degrees outside."
"Trust me. In about an hour, Britta will turn the air up. She's a grizzly and hates the heat."
"Okay," Charlie said on a chuckle. Berg finished and motioned to the couch.
"Madam."
"Thank you. For everything. I really mean it."
"Anytime."
Charlie stepped close and her arms slipped around his chest. She was hugging him and Berg hugged her back, holding her tight against his body. And for once, for him, it wasn't an awkward thing because of height differences and not knowing fully what kind of relationship he really had with Charlie. There was no fumbling, no leaning down or stretching up. It was the most comfortable hug Berg had ever experienced with a woman who wasn't a close relative. And to his bear-like way of thinking, it was because Charlie fit perfectly into his life. She just didn't know it yet. Charlie pulled away first, giving him a wink and smile before dropping onto his couch. She kicked off her sneakers and stretched out, letting out a big yawn as she relaxed into the cushions. With a nod, Berg forced himself to walk away from her, leaving Charlie alone on that couch. He turned off all the other lights in the living room, letting her handle the one by her head. He was about to go down the hallway to the stairs when he heard Charlie giggle a little. He looked back and saw that his stupid dog had gotten on the couch with her. He was by her feet now, letting her rest them on his big head.
Psst.
Berg motioned to the dog to come, but he wouldn't move.
Psst.
He's not bothering me, Charlie said, her back to the room. You can leave him. But Berg didn't want to leave the bastard. He wanted to be the one that Charlie was putting her feet on. He wanted to be curled up with her on the couch for the night. Who knew he'd ever see that damn dog as a romantic rival? But here they were.
Okay, well, if he gets on your nerves, feel free to kick him off.
He spit out the last part between clenched teeth, his gaze locked with the dog's. Will do. Night, Berg.
Night, Charlie.
Berg made his way up to his room, sat on his bed, and stared at absolutely nothing until his sister walked in. She wore one of the team hockey shirts which reached down to her knees. Smirking, she said, "You dumbass. You left her with the dog?" Groaning, Berg fell back onto his bed, his sister's laughter giving him a headache. Chapter 17. They suddenly decided to move her in the middle of the night. Men in body armor and shielded helmets, so that she couldn't see their faces. They burst into her cell, but seemed thrown off to find her awake and sitting on her bed, feet on the floor, elbows on her knees, and hands clasped in front of her. She'd been waiting, and they knew it. The group paused for a brief second before moving on. Someone grabbed her by the back of the neck and shoved her to the ground on her face. They pinned her there before cuffing her arms and legs and then adding the chains. They blindfolded her and put a leather bit in her mouth to keep her from biting. Once done, they lifted her up and proceeded to carry her out. There were no catcalls from other cells, no sounds at all. But she could hear the increased heartbeats, the panicked breathing, the scent of fear. All those men around her waiting for her to do something. Yes, she was in the men's prison, a decision made after the third body was found. They couldn't pin the murders on her, but they wanted to. Of course, it didn't help that the bodies stopped dropping in the women's cells once she was gone. Mary McKilligan was not taken to another part of the prison as she expected, the crazy ward they all quietly called it, where they put the worst of the worst. They had put her there once before, but it had not ended well. She'd dig holes through the concrete and into the other cells around hers, and then she'd have some fun. Get back to her cell, hide the hole, and wait until the guards came by to do a cell check. She'd smile when she'd hear the gasps of shock, or the screaming. She loved when there was screaming. They'd put her back in the regular cells, not because they had no evidence she'd done anything. They never had evidence. But because she and the Gov had come to an agreement. She'd stop killing, and he'd let her stay in the regular cells. She'd agreed, with a smile. He'd cried after she'd left his office. She didn't know why. She'd kept her promise. She hadn't killed anyone. Why bother with all the mess when she could get them to do the job to themselves? But no, they didn't take her anywhere else in the prison. Instead, they carried her out all together and threw her into the back of what she suspected was a van. Men came in with her, the back door closed, the engine started, and they were moving. No one spoke around her. They'd learned not to. She remembered voices, remembered conversations, and then she used them against those people just because she could. She didn't need a reason.
She'd always bored easy.
They drove for hours. She could sense the sun had come up when the van finally stopped. The doors were opened. Several gloved hands picked her